Walt Benscotter and Norla Callison have been farmers all their lives. They hopped over clods behind a foot burner and years later rode over the same dirt in a tractor. Their perspective is that of men who have stayed in one place, done the same job, and watched the place and the job change. On this tape, they reminisce with each other about the old one-room schools, weather and crop changes, Halloween tricks, hell-raising, chivalry, sneak thieves, and prohibition.
It sure does. But we've had lots of winters here that we never got much snow until Christmas. Well, one thing we can think about that started early like this, maybe we'll have an early spring, but that's got so it don't work.
It don't hold through August.
It used to. And there's another thing that we used to have that we don't have anymore. We had one a year or two ago, and that's January thaw.
January thaw.
When I was a kid, we would get snow knee deep. And people say, oh, well, we'll get the January thaw and take it off, and it was just as sure as death and taxes.
Yeah.
We got that January thaw, it never missed. But we don't get them January thaws. We had one a year, two, 3 years ago, a small one. But that's the first January thaw we've had in years. Our winters just changed. I don't know whether it's cutting off the timber that changed things or not. I know back when back in Cedar Creek and the Crescent Country, since they've cut the timber off there, it's not near as frosty. In there, it lets the air currents in there, and it's a lot warmer. But our seasons have changed.
Listen, Bob, don't you think that the whole cockeyed thing is changing?
I think so.
You can remember years ago when we used to farm with horses, we had to get in the field early in order to get our work done, and we did. We was able to get out there. Well,
if it's like it's been now, we had to farm with horses, and it took a week or so to get your horses toughened in, and you'd kill them.
That's right.
Why, you wouldn't get to first base.
No.
Farming with horses now. It's just about a week now that it's fit to work.
Yeah.
It's too wet, and then there's about a week it's fit to work, and then it's too dry. And when we worked with horses, it wasn't that way.
No. We spent plow for days.
Well, I remember the spring of 1934. Well, I remember it very distinctly. That was the spring after we bought our first cat. We bought it the fall of 33, and it was a mild winter. And I plowed this piece of ground right across over here in February. And it was warm, and of an afternoon going along that north slope, I could look down this way, and the ground, the clods in the ground was covered with cobwebs, and there was little gnats. The air was full of them.
Yeah.
That was in February.
Just like in the fall of the year.
That's right, just like fall of the year, and them cobwebs and them gnats. The air was full of them.
You'd be plowing that soon in February?
I did that year. And that's the last time I've ever plowed in February, 1934. Well, the year after I bought the cat. That's why I know it. When I bought it in the fall of 33.
That same spring, Bob. I'm quite sure of the same spring. We went to work in February, and we never quit until everything was done. We never had a... You know, didn't have any more bad weather, have any more winter at all.
Well, I was going to school over here, and I finished going to school over here in 1918. And you know, there was more than 1 year when I was going to school over there that Klaus Eichner would seed in February.
Yeah.
Of course, he's early on that canyon point down there, but I know that happened more than once. That Klaus, the kids had come to school, well, Dad seeding in February.
Yeah.
Well, heck, the seeding now in February.
Well, January and February now is usually when
we have
no snow.
One of the hardest months.
Yeah.
So I think the whole thing is changed.
I think our weather pattern has changed.
I don't think
there's any doubt about it.
Has that made a difference in the crops that people put in?
Well, yes and no. We used to be able to grow spring wheat here. We grow real good spring wheat.
No,
I don't think you'd get your money back now if you tried it. You know, it turns dry so quick that
summer
moisture.
One time, and I can't think of the year, but it was after I bought the cat. the fall of 33, and it was after that several years. We had the Whitstone place in fall wheat, and by golly, it was after Mabel and I was married, and we got married the fall of 34. And by golly, I had that seeded in fall wheat, and it winter kill. And it was just a piece of a tad, it looked like a, well, it was a mess. There's just no wheat there.
It winter killed early in the fall, I bet you.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And it was no good at all, and by God, of course, I was going to turn it over, and it turned in, and we had a wet spring. And I couldn't dig it up. That's all I had to put in to mount anything. And you know, when I got that, it rained and rained, and I just couldn't work. And I finally, it quit raining the last of May. And I went over there and dug that mess up, and I remember I finished up, I seeded my corners out, and it started raining. Showered. And it was wet, too wet to really be seeding, but I had to do it. That was the 5th of June.
The 5th of June?
The 5th of June. I never forgot that. It was the 5th day of June that I seeded that the Federation wheat. Federation used to be a good spring wheat.
Oh, yeah.
I seeded that the Federation. And so help me, I got 40 bushels. Spring wheat.
Yeah. No fertilizer.
Absolutely no fertilizer. 40 bushels, it was nice. I finished up in the shower this evening. But I can't tell you the year, but it was before Mabel and I got married.
The last spring wheat I ever grew, and that was a pretty good crop too, was in 41. That was a wet fall, wasn't it? 41.
That was the year that Bonnie and I went up and helped cut the neighbor Cain's wheat up here by the Balance Rock. 41, and by golly, we finished up, and that wheat was as soft as mush, and it didn't taste like wheat.
Just chalky.
It just tasted chalky, and by golly, poor old Bob was beside himself to get it cut, and Bonnie and I went up there and worked one day, the two of us, and that was big business in them days, two combines in one field.
Yeah.
He had the old, I forget what combine he had. I had the old case. But anyway, we finished up along, and it was getting pretty in the evening, right? And you know, it was so wet, them combine tracks was that deep. They're sinking in. Talk about pulling hard.
Steel wheels.
That's right, steel wheels. Talk about pulling hard. You get a book pretty tank pretty full of wheat, and you can see every one of them tracks around the field out. And then them steel wheels were cutting in just about that deep.
About 3 or 4 inches.
And we finished up, it was a showering, and that was the last.
Yeah.
It rained and there was never another kernel cut around here.
Oh.
But of course the rest of us was done. Bob didn't have a combine. Yeah. He was at the mercy of the weather.
Yeah.
But it was in October, I know that.
We cut barley down 28 acres on Marsfoot, and we could only get the bulk tank about half full. The front wheel would slide, and the front wheel on the combine it would slide.
And you take that wet wheat swelled up like that chalky stuff, and by golly, it was so wet it wouldn't hardly run.
Yeah.
Remember in the tank?
Yes.
It just wouldn't run, like dry wheat will just swish is going like that. So,
wheat like that wouldn't be worth much to sell, would it?
Well, it isn't hardly. The hogs, there's no food value in it. After wheat gets wet so many times, it takes all the food back out of it.
Well, a hell of a sprout, a lot of them sprouted.
A lot of sprouts.
Sprouted right in the head. Yeah. No, I fed a whole bunch of hogs that winter.
They just stand around and squeal at
you. And they didn't do nothing.
Every time you go out there, the hogs will be at the feeder there at the fence looking up at you squealing. Yeah. There's no food value to it.
You can feed them all you want to. I fed mine in the south feeder. They never did run out, but no growth.
They won't grow. There's nothing there.
I had three old sows fell the next spring, and they farrowed 31 pigs, the three of them, and I saved one.
Remember George?
The rest of them was either born dead or died as shortly after they were born.
The mother wasn't getting the right minerals.
No, she didn't. If I'd have known, if I'd have had any idea, but I'd never fed any of that kind of feed before.
That was the same year George Davison had this piece over here, Bob's, you know, across the draw.
Yeah.
The corners over there were Harley and you and I all. Yeah. The Bob corners up. He had that in Jennings Club wheat, and that was one of the best.
Jennings
Club I ever saw, and it all fell down. It didn't hit George right up the chin.
Yeah.
Boy, that was good wheat, and it got wet and rained, and they thrashed and harvested. And he had a mess of pigs there, and you know, them pigs never done nothing.
No, they...
And they wound up before spring, they all got sick, you remember?
Yeah.
And he had pigs die like flies.
They just shipped them in there from Montana.
Yeah, and they brought in some disease.
Yeah.
And if he didn't have one mess. Them feeding that crappy wheat with no food value, and he got disease from them Montanas mixed in with his pigs, and he just lost hogs like, he died like flies.
I heard from a woman down in Genesee that the way that her grandfather saved himself in that wet harvest of 1893 was that he turned his hogs loose in the stacks, in the wheat stacks.
Yeah.
And that's the only way he managed to make anything out of them.
I've heard of people just turn them out in the field. You know, John Woody used to turn his hogs out every fall, because that was a good fall.
Well.
And they'd run and pick up every head. And they'd fatten up, man, them pigs.
No. No, I'll just with you. The Myers place was hog tight.
Well, John,
I thought I had it made.
Well, John used to run his down, his wasn't hog tight. Run over the canyon side and everywhere.
Yeah, well, by then I tried her, and I don't think they'd gain 5 pounds all fall.
You remember Sam Bigham used to always turn his pigs out?
Yeah.
Every fall, Sam.
They just, Bob, they just run. You know what I mean? They
travel
so much
that they
don't...
They run their legs off looking for
them. Well, yeah, they find that. I tell you, it was a little different when they used to shock, because the heads would all be...
Around the shock.
Around the shock. But when you combine it, was a different story.
Well, I'm speaking about thrashing with a stationary.
Yeah.
They used stationary, and I know John Woody and Sam Bigham. They pretty much had their places all fenced except along the canyon, and there wasn't nothing down. They wouldn't go down in there anyway. But they'd turn their hogs out and pick up all the heads.
Yeah.
Well, them hogs come out fast.
You remember how it used to be around the shop? There was always a bunch of heads.
Yeah.
But with the combine, it was a different story. They had to hunt for it.
Basically, if you had to bind a bundle,
yeah,
there was always a few heads got away from you on the ground, but, you know.
My hogs had a wonderful time. They enjoyed it immensely.
They were happy hogs, yeah.
They didn't gain any weight.
They were happy hogs. My wheat's getting up again.
Pardon?
Wheat's up again.
Oh, yeah. Is it up today, I wonder?
Yeah, it went up today. We heard, I forget. I think it went up 2 cents today. I think it was 5.22 in the morning. 5.20, I think, yesterday. 5.22. I can't understand that now. We used to have, you know, between Kendrick and Portland, it'd be around 20, 21 cents, and it gains a little bit every month on the creek. And the other day, there was 36 cents difference between Kendrick and Portland. I just can't see how they got that difference.
I don't know. I'm quite sure the freight isn't that much, is it?
The wheat prices have never been anything like this before, have they?
Pardon?
Wheat prices have never been anything like this before, have they?
No.
Nobody ever saw
what. What did they get up during the World First World War?
They never got this. I know that.
Oh no, no, no. What did they get to 100? Did they get to 3?
Yeah, I think it was over $3.
We should. The highest we ever sold wheat was $1, or $2, and I think it was $2.25.
I think it got up around $3, and there was a few fellows that helped for $4, and it broke, remember?
Yeah, it broke them.
They helped for $4, and they didn't have sense enough to turn loose, and just kept a holding and holding and holding a couple of years, and the storage pretty much took it, and it broke them.
And in the meantime, we went down, down, down.
That's right. And the storage went up and up.
You know, I was so scared this fall that it was going to break. I sold for $4.37. But I don't regret it.
No.
That's a good price.
Sure.
Bob still got half of his yet. He was going to hold it after the first of the year.
Yeah.
But he can sell it now, but he can sell it and not take money until after the first of the year.
Yeah.
And he's a watch it all the fools.
Yeah, it, you know, here about 10 days ago, it was down to, 4.80 or
That is 4.50 something. In Denver.
In Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking television press.
Well, I think it was down around 470 one time in Portland.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it seems like there's an awful spread between Portland and here now. And peas, my God, that's what the price peas are.
Lentils.
I was out to Moscow last week and I went and gave one some...
thing running?
Yeah.
But have you had that thing running?
Yeah, I sure have.
Turn it off.
Warehouse Foods. Mabel's, we have quite a bit of split peas here too. Says I wish you'd give me some split peas. Now they're cheaper there than they would be a regular store, you know. And by God, I got a little cellophane bag about that long of split peas, too, 90 cents. Or at a grocery store, it'd be a dollar. Now, who ever heard of that?
Yeah.
The
pepper. Well, 30 cents a pound.
Well, this here's 45 a pound.
Huh?
45 a pound. 2 pound bag was 90 cents.
Well, yeah. But they've been processed. You got
to
pay for that bag and put them in it.
And the guy that puts it in the bag and run it through the machine to crack them.
Yeah. Yeah, but, does it take cracked peas to the warehouse or doctor?
My grandmother used to make the best bean soup out of split beans.
Yeah.
Boy, she could really make good beans.
Did people usually, in the early days, would they take their crops in and buy them back after they're processed, or were they processing themselves, like peas? Would they?
They usually kept enough at home.
Yeah. Then split them out yourself?
I know beans and stuff like that, we always kept beans enough last all winter.
Oh, you, before they were processed?
Yeah, we didn't process them, we just kept a few beans at home.
How
didn't buy any.
How would you clean them out?
Just run them through the fan mill, take them out, and spread a tarp down the ground. We used to clean that way and wind them.
Everybody
you can do a good job
of
winding
them.
All that fan mill.
Everybody had a fan mill to clean their own seed grain, but
yeah.
Anymore of that don't.
That's like winnowing. That's winnowing when you.
Yeah.
Throw
the regular screens and air and you do
the big fan in there, and it goes around. The fan blows out, and the crap blows out the back end. You know, and we used to have dusters treated their own wheat. But everybody got so lazy now, they don't do that. It's easier to take it down and run up there and
buy all the seed wheat in town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But no, we used to. I tell you, the farmer put in there everything years ago, he put in there, come off from the farm.
That's right.
We had our own milk and butter, cheese and eggs and cured meat, and we raised our own vegetables and had our own beans, apples,
prunes.
Prunes had dried. There used to be several prune dryers on the ridge here.
Yeah, there was three at one time, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Meyer, Johnson, and Russell.
Oh, H.A. Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you can remember when this place over here, the George Farm, the old Grandma Keene place, that was all apple trees at one time.
Yeah.
And that packing house you know there?
Yeah.
The old Taylor place.
Yeah.
With the packing plant there, was apples.
There was apples.
Last apples I remember on that, over here on this piece of Grandma Keene's was in that draw that goes up from where you go into the old Carter place up to Frankie's. It was up in that cove, you remember, on the hillside. Boy, they were the best apples. They were grabbing steam, you know. I used to go to school, and there was either three or four trees.
Yeah.
And I'd go by there and I'd go up and hike their kids and their bucky kids, and I'd go up there and get them apples. Boy, they were the snappiest. Boy, they just fall apple.
Yeah.
Boy, they were good.
Did you both go to school at the schoolhouse that Frankie lives in now, over there?
Yeah. Well, not that building.
Right. It's the same place, but different school.
Yes, same place, but a different building.
And a little further down the hill.
Yeah, just about the width of the thing down the hill.
That's right. We used to play baseball on the upper side of the schoolhouse, right where his house sits. That was right where the baseball diamond was. We used the back of the schoolhouse for backstop.
Didn't you break a few windows that way?
No, there wasn't a window on the back. On the back end, there was no windows on that end. And that's for backstop.
Were there quite a few sports and games and things played in the school in those days?
Well, every one of these ridges had a baseball team.
Yeah, at one time.
At one time, there.
At one time.
Every time this ridge had a baseball, Bear Ridge, Cameron,
Leland,
Southwick, and every town, of course.
Would you go out and play each other?
Oh, yeah, they'd play on Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. He used to play over here, over the Red Barn, didn't he? Right there in that flat.
Well. Yeah, that it was before my time.
But before my time, but Wade Keene told me about it.
Yeah.
And they played in that flat right.
That's when Uncle Wallace lived.
Yeah,
there.
They played right across the road there. George, you got that patch, he put some oats.
Yeah.
Across the road there between the creek and the road, where the highway is now.
Yeah.
That was the baseball there. Wade Keene put me straight on that.
Yeah.
They was playing baseball the afternoon I was born.
Yeah.
Wade said I was born playing baseball.
Yeah, I remember one time, and that time I think they played up there at Keene's.
You play out south of the...
Out south of the building.
Out
there.
South of George's garage out there.
And I remember one time the Carlson boys came over here from Six Ridge. Yeah. And I suppose it was a Six Ridge team, or not, it wouldn't be Six Ridge, it would be
a Little Bear.
Little Bear. That's where the Carlson place was.
Right across the street. Right across from
the old Harlan place. Is that Burnt Ridge?
No. Yeah, that's Burnt Ridge.
It's Burnt Ridge.
Right, that's Burnt Ridge.
Yeah.
Hey, it's between Bear Creek and Burnt Creek.
Yeah.
Some people call it Camp Creek now. Yeah, that's Burnt Ridge.
Yeah. Burnt Ridge. They just come over here. And
yeah, that old Carlson place of the house, the barn sits right on the edge of the canyon there.
Yeah.
And Jim Trout lives there now. You know, I hadn't been there for years and years and years. And last fall one day, Mabel and I had been to Moscow, and she'd always wanted to see Burnt Ridge. She'd been as far down as the cemetery.
Yeah.
Well, we went down and looked at the cemetery, and I says, let's go clear down at the end, clear down to Jim's place, the old Carlson place. You know, it must be 3 miles from there on down to the end of the ridge,
far away. Right.
That's a nice laying ridge.
Yeah.
The ground is
beautiful.
Pretty level. We drove down there and turned around there by Jim's house and went back.
There used to be a lot of, in these baseball games and stuff, was there a lot of competition between the different ridges and in terms of sports and stuff like that?
Well, I think baseball is the only game they play.
Baseball, at that time, baseball was the only game I think they
played. They all played baseball. They didn't have any practice. They didn't practice. They just got their practice while they was playing.
would one team walk over to another ridge and play there, or what?
Well, usually horseback.
Horseback.
Or even buggy.
Mm-hmm. That was before car time.
Practically everybody rode horseback those days. Yeah.
Buggy
all
and
the
hack.
Instead of having a motorcycle or a car, he had a horse.
Mm-hmm.
The women and kids would go in the hack, and the young bucks or the baseball players had a horse. Right, a saddle horse.
What was it like in the one room school? I know like when you watch a TV show or something about those days, the kids are always playing tricks, like, you know, slipping a frog in the teacher's desk or something like that. You know, that kind of stuff happened a lot, or was a lot calmer than they show it?
I would say there was very little of it, because the teacher always seemed to have eyes in the back of her head.
they wouldn't stand for that stuff.
No, they didn't stand for it. We had one old girl down there, you probably remember, that had a buggy whip that she used on the kids.
Huh.
Well, I remember Sarah Sweeney, you remember, she stayed with your folks. Or no, she boarded over here at Jacobus's.
Yeah.
And I remember she had a cut-off broomstick. Just cut the broom off and had that stick. And I'll tell you now, that was a very effective method. she just reached out and whammy of that thing, and I saw her one time hit a kid right side of the head with it.
You never went to school to Liza Dallas, did you?
No, but I heard about her.
Boy, she knocked all the papers off my desk one time, whipping old Frank Mortimer. Scared I was just a little Peter. Boy, I was so damn scared.
I imagine you wasn't the only one scared. You probably could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah, she sure gave old Frank a going over. Yeah, she had a twisted rawhide.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a twisted rawhide whipping. Boy, I was telling you, when that came down, it was really meant something.
You meant it.
Well, they didn't have any problem keeping the like, some of the boys would be really, really old, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, 16, 17, around in there.
We got pictures in here. We got pictures someplace of kids going to school. They look like young men.
Where must they? Big, long, flowing must they?
Yeah.
We got one up home there that was George Davison and Dad and Jess Ball.
And some of the Brillharts, I suppose.
Yeah, those. A Brillhart and George Basher.
Yeah.
And they all had big grown men, but they look like a bunch of grown men.
Well, wouldn't you have a hard time keeping them?
Oh, them guys were they now. They were all good guys.
Mm-hmm.
They never had no trouble. Yeah.
No, the Basher boys, all I think they all became physicians, didn't they? Hmm. Surgeons?
I think they were.
Yeah.
I think they all were.
So they must have gotten some pretty good
school. Two that I remember Dad speaking of. There was George and Lester Basher. Now, was there any more than that? I don't know.
I think there was three of them.
They lived on the Woody place.
Huh?
They lived on the Woody place.
Yeah.
That was the old Basher place.
And
what's their name?
Basher.
Basher.
Basher. B-A-S-H-E-R. Basher.
One of the boys came back. That was when Pete was still alive. And stopped and saw us. But I can't remember which one it was.
Well, you see, if they was alive, the youngest of them would be 100 years old.
Yeah. But they were, one of them was a noted, surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Had a big name in California. I forget now what town he was.
I think they left here and went to California.
And, I'll tell you, there was some good people came out of the country schools. You know what I mean? Educated people.
Some ways I think the kids in the country schools, they get a lot.
I honestly think that it was a worst mistake that the state ever made when they consolidated the schools. I know it was the worst mistake financially.
They told us there was going to be less, but anybody, if you had any sense at all, knew that it couldn't be.
That's right.
Cheaper.
And taxes have done nothing but go up. School tax.
You're hiring a teacher, you're hiring a bus driver, and you got a bus.
Yeah.
And there's always
and you got maintenance
and everything, and it just can't be cheaper. And another thing, the kids in the country, I know you went through it, and we all went through it. One teacher to eighth grade, and I tell you, she didn't have time to spend much time on anybody.
Just
a few minutes to each class.
Would the older kids help out the younger kids sometimes?
No, they were using a pad on their own clue, getting their own lessons, but the kids down the line, that's where I think the country school had it on the other. Or say a kid in the fifth grade. He'd sit there and he'd listen, he'd get his work done, or maybe he'd just listen, picking daisies, should have been studying, but he'd listen. And he'd hear the kids in the seventh and eighth grade reciting.
Yeah.
And he'd hear that before he ever got there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got up there, he knew a lot of that stuff. Now that's where I think a lot of them, the country school by going had it on the others, where they could sit there and listen.
Well, you probably remember when the state used to give eighth grade examinations.
Yeah, I took one.
And 9 times out of 10, it would be a country school that got the highest grade.
Yeah, yeah.
Some kid in the country school would come up for the highest grade of the
homework. How long would a teacher usually stay on in a country school? Did they? I know a lot of school teachers came out. They were young women, and then they married pretty soon. Were there?
Well, it varied a lot. Now Sweeney, how long was she here? She was here
2 years.
Two? I thought it was three.
No, she was. I had her in the fifth and sixth. And I had Ann Dable in the 7th and 8th.
Well, I went to school to Sweeney, I think, 2 years.
Yeah, I went 2 years.
You know what Tom Green told me when he was down at Milton Freewater? He had more or less discipline trouble, you know, in the school. And he said the country kids were by far the best kids. The kids that came in out of the country, that's after they consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they were the best students, caused him the least trouble.
Well, I think a lot of that is Walt, that the kids in the country had something to do.
Well, he said they go home at night, he said, and they all had chores to do, they all had work to
they
do.
They had responsibility.
The other kids, they'd run around town and raise hell. And,
Well, they'd get a candy bar, and two or three kids get together and do nothing.
Yeah.
Well, the country kids, they get through school, they didn't have school buses. You get on the cayuse and go home, and you had to milk some cows night and morning, and He had chores to do. He had something to do.
That's right.
Unemployment didn't bother him a bit before he had things to do. He didn't have time to get into trouble. Of course, on Halloween, he'd go out sometimes and upset a cribby or something like that, you know, but that's excusable on Halloween, you know.
I heard about other Halloween tricks like taking apart buggies and things and putting them inside the schoolhouse. They do that kind of stuff out here?
Yeah, they even put a cow inside the schoolhouse down here one time. A steer. Did you ever know who did that? I ain't gonna tell till they're all dead. I was in the Canada. I wasn't even there.
But you heard
me. Yeah, I heard about it.
Well, I don't think anybody would mind these days.
That was what you might call a shitty trick.
That wasn't very nice.
Well, it seems like most of the tricks that people played in those days really were a lot more fun and a lot less mean.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They were more to get people to laugh than to hurt people.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I think the kids in them days, by God, really, I think they really, really enjoyed themselves much. You know, once in a while they'd ski a little bit, but they mostly skated and
coasting,
and coasting, you know, and then it'd end up, we'd go over to somebody's house when the party broke up, you know. We go up to the house and have an oyster stew.
Was this more when you're little kids or when you're
older? Oh, we were kids going to school.
Well,
grades over.
Most all the grades.
The whole.
That is the I don't think the real little kids ever turned out.
First and second grade didn't get in all, but
rugged.
Of course we had kids here in them days. I went over here when I was 45. And Dad went when he was 60.
Yeah.
Over here, and you could get a bus like that, and you could have a pretty nice time of skating or coaching. And I went up to the house and have an oyster feed, oyster stew.
Do you remember those old barrel staves we used to go coasting on? Just take a barrel stave and put a block on it and put a seat on top of the block, about like a milking stew. And try sitting on that thing.
You couldn't control it one bit, you know.
Yeah. I can tell you, boy, you got quite a thrill at times.
Yeah. And they used to have sleigh ride parties, you remember?
Yeah, toboggans. You remember when we used to ride over here on Jay Ball's Cove?
That's right over here where the big tree is, that steep cove right over there. Straight off.
Used to drift the snow, drift up the top of the hill, 6-8 feet high.
Be a jump off there, high in your head.
Yeah, high as your head, you know, or higher. Come down over that thing, and boy, I'm going to tell you, when you hit the ground.
You just literally fly.
Yeah. That old board is cracked like a rifle. And you had to be careful and take your breath away.
Yeah, you keep your mouth shut.
Going that fast.
Yeah. When you started to get older, how did courtship, you know, when you were starting to get older and dating and things like that, how did those things work in the country in the early days? What kind of things would you do then?
I think you just took your girl walking.
Just use the shank ponies. Yeah, they used to go to church, you know, and the young fellow would walk his gal home from church. You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it took quite a little while, and they didn't hurry.
If you were lucky, you had a team.
That's right. They didn't hurry going home, you know. They had lots of time. You know. And then there's sleigh ride parties. You take a big old bobsled and put some straw in there. If you're lucky enough to have a foot warmer, it's going to keep your feet warm, you know, and the blankets or horse blankets, you know. And
yeah,
horses, you know, with the sleigh bells or across the hames, you know, and the Skinner, he was the driver. The rest of them back in there, of course, bundled up, try to keep from freezing. And of course, the boys couldn't let the girls get cold.
Oh, of course not.
You know.
I remember one time, we went to Troy. I forget how many there was of us, but I remember Nettie Mae was along. She was older than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And coming home, I just had old Shorty and Trix, so there wasn't too many of us, but there was enough for a sleigh ride anyway. I can't remember whether we went to a dance or what we went to, but anyway, coming home, I got sleepy. I tied up the line and crawled down under the covers and went to sleep. And Nettie Mae said we met two rigs in Bethel Gulch up there, and the team turned out for them, but
they
I didn't know it. I knew nothing about it, but
yeah,
she was over and she
knew where home was, and they turned out there and go by.
Yeah. And
one time, Harry and Ernie and I went to Randall Flat today. You've been out to Randall Flat, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
One of the coldest places I've ever allowed to be, you know.
That's north of far.
Northwest.
Yeah.
Out there northwest. Well, we went up there, Harry and I, and Ernie had one pretty good horse, and Harry had a pretty good one. So Ernie and I come down, and Ernie and I went over, and Harry had a sled. I harnessed up the team and Harry's horse and Ernie's horse, and I went to Randall Flat to a dance. Man, it was below zero. I come off near freezing again. Like I went up there and danced, you know, with them sweet gals, you know, we used to have some fine times there. Well, once in a while, some rascal would bring in a little moonshine, too, you know, or crop in. And then all this, of course, she's sleeping in that bedroom out over there. By golly, it got time for us to come home, and we weren't home. Boy, she spent an awful night. And it was broad daylight, and she was getting worried. And she kept looking. She just knew that something had happened to them guys. And she said it was broad daylight, and said, I looked out, and here come Ernie and I, leading the old mare, walking home. We left the other horse and sled over to Harry, and here we come in there broad daylight, coming across the field. I see the little words. Oh, shuck. That's what you'd call young and irresponsible.
when a man kind of decided on a woman he thought he might like to marry, would the courtship take quite a while?
I tell you, in our time we didn't get married very young. I think I was 28. How old were you, Buff?
Going on 32. Yeah. Hey, remember the harvest balls you used to have down here at the temple? Always had a harvest ball every fall.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that was some dance.
Yeah.
They'd decorate that all up with pumpkins and corn stalk or corn shocks of corn, you know. Man Brothers, you remember them? They'd come up here and play. They was a good orchestra.
Yeah.
They were, well, after they outgrew Lewiston here, they played big time. They played Seattle and San Francisco and places like that. In the big hotels there. They were tops. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Man Brothers played there, and then there was another after Man Brothers left here and went into the big circuit. Why, then there was Kaufman's. That's a good orchestra. Yeah. You know, the Kaufman's used to come up here. We used to have the best times down there, you know, in the fall and harvest was all done. They had a big harvest ball. And I don't know why it didn't fall down. Look at it now, the way the crowds used to get in there. They had some wonderful times there.
To wonder that old temple didn't cave in, I saw that floor covered with people.
That's right.
They condemned it. Why it didn't break down, I don't know.
I don't know.
Still condemned, I guess, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, they got some steel posts in there. Down below. It's pretty good now.
I've been hearing something about after people got married, their neighbors would throw a charivari for them. Did that happen much up here?
Oh, it never failed. Always had a charivari, you know. Yeah. You just figure on buying the treats.
Shotguns and the works.
What would a charivari be? What would people do in a charivari?
Oh, just make all the cockeyed noise you can make. Was about all the shit. What it really should have been was music, you know. What would you call it?
Just kind of serenade.
Serenade, but it wasn't a serenade. It was just a bunch of noise.
Was that the night they got married, or
well,
any time?
The first night you brought them home.
Then they got home on their honeymoon, you know. Why, the couple always knew they were coming. And they'd have candy bars, you know, and apples and different things for treats, you know, and coffee. And they'd move in, you know, and the crowd would be in. And they always liked to wait until they got in bed if they could. Wait late, you know. And they'd sneak in, you know, and that noise that turned loose outside, you know, and there's always some rascal or two with every shotgun. Get right beside the house, shoot right up in the air like that, and tin cans and stuff, and you remember that old horse fiddle he used to have? And that old rig that turned to the crank, and they called a horse fiddle?
You know,
it's a cog, they run on a cog like that, and it's a noisy thing.
I think I still found it.
You have?
I think it's up there in this old shed.
It is.
I think
well, yeah, you want to hang on to that. That thing would be something. that made the office noise. And they turned that thing in a crank and the thing run on a cog and jump from one cog to the other. Oh, brother, talk about noise. They'd get them up, you know, by the out of bed, you know, and they'd invite them in, you know, the noise. That was the main idea, to get them up, you know, and then they'd sit around, you know, and visit and eat candy bars and apples. Just have a nice evening. Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't remember it. My memory ain't so good anymore. But Kyle Anderson told me the other day, you know, when we were shiveried, I don't know whether you came or not.
Well, I imagine.
The Woody Boys were there, and Kyle, I can't remember who all. But anyway, he knew that we weren't prepared for him.
Yeah.
So he came and told me.
You better get something, man.
Yeah. So I went to town and got some cigars, candy bars. And got prepared for the chivalry, and it took place, all right.
Got the treats.
Yeah. And we had ice cream.
I don't know. In them days, the people was happy.
Oh,
some ways, I think they're happier than they are now.
Oh, happier.
People got so much now that they should be happy. Mm-hmm. But they just got so much that... And I know one thing, we used to visit a lot more.
Oh, have pinochle parties.
They'd have parties, you know,
different
and
parties.
People would go to church and the neighbor would invite them home for dinner, or we'd invite somebody home to our place, you know, and people visited. And they had parties, you know, and literary, you remember, you used to have literary over there, programs, and by God, now, you know, you never see your neighbor. You wave at him across the draw or across the fence when you're on one track and he's on the other, wave at him going to come in town.
Yeah.
But actually, as far as going over to a neighbor to visit and spend the day and eat dinner with him, it is pretty unheard of.
Yeah.
It's just people don't, they'll get in the car and drive 50 or 100 miles somewhere to visit somebody.
That went out when the cars came in.
That's right. But when we had horses and the old buggy or the hack, well, you didn't get too far away from home.
Did they used to have those kitchen sweats out here?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'd get together and dance in the kitchen. It's just boys are just dressed in overalls, you know. And just one guy maybe play the squeeze box, another the fiddle, you know. And that's what it's called. It's called kitchen sweats, you know.
Because everybody gets in there and sweats.
Well, they was in that place and there was a tick in there and he'd get hot, you know, and they'd get up a sweat, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good exercise. Yeah. But they had a lot of fun, I don't know. I think maybe they enjoyed it better than we know.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take so much them days to make people happy. People's got so now, you know, that it takes an awful lot to make them happy. You could have a good time at a kitchen sweat and a pair of overalls.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's about all they ever wore. The man just wore new wash pair of overalls, clean shirts, you know. And no admission, I don't think, was ever charged. Maybe they might have passed the hat to pay the fiddler and the guy playing the squeeze box. Yeah. Remember they used to have the answer at Sam Bigham's over the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can see that old fiddler.
The old Grenry.
I can see that old fiddler sitting up there, yet. Yeah. I was just a kid. Dad and mother used to go. I can see. Just as plain as to me, I can see that. It's a pretty good sized hall.
Yeah.
That was a lot bigger than the kitchen. They should really put on quite a dance there. Yeah.
I wonder if the old building still stands. I think it does.
Yeah, it's still there. Don't look in too bad a shape either.
And barn dances? They used to have a barn dance once in a while. Remember they had quite a series of barn dances down there where near Bramberley. You remember that?
They turned that into quite a dance business.
Were you there the night the floor broke through?
No.
Hey, my house had a name on,
you know. One night the floor broke through. I don't know if they had any more after that or not. It was when I tell you who was living there. It was Compton.
Stewart.
Sure. Kurt Compton.
he was always out to making a dollar.
Yeah, he's got a dollar.
He turned it into a dance position.
Yeah.
You know, he's still living.
Pardon?
He's still living.
Well, Chauncey's dead, isn't he?
Oh, Chauncey's been dead for years.
How about the girls?
Well, Maud's alive. Edith, it seems to me like Edith is dead. But Stuart's alive and Maud's alive.
Yeah.
Chauncey's been dead several years. He was the one that had
infantile
paralysis, you know.
Pretty
but Stuart lives
well.
I believe he lives at, you know, he lives at Hayden Lake. It's just out of edge of Coeur d'Alene.
Chauncey?
No, Stuart.
Oh, Stuart.
Stuart lives at, I think it's Hayden Lake, just edge of Coeur d'Alene. Yeah, somebody told me during the last year that they saw Stuart.
I wonder how about Stuart's boy.
Dean? Dean?
Yeah, he was a pretty nice kid.
He was a nice kid. I don't know where Dean's at. Last I knew of Dean, he was in California. But he was a handsome rascal. He used to hold beans for me and Dad. He was a good kid. He was a nice looking, fine looking kid. About 6'2" tall, and just a small kid.
Would there be big parties and things too after, like after they finished thrashing out one farm or something? Would there be a party there to kind of celebrate that?
They just moved to another farm.
How many thrashing rigs were there, like on this end of the ridge?
What was that?
How many thrashing rigs
were
there?
How many thrashing machines were there?
One year there was maybe more than one year there was only one. Old Chris Myers, you remember?
Yeah.
The fall the grain got wet. He thrashed the whole ridge that year, but the next year that was when the company machine was.
Well, then before the company machine, you remember George Clem used to thrash up here.
George Clem.
He thrashed for us a number of years.
Yeah.
Then Warney May used to thrash.
Yeah.
And Jess Ball.
But Warney used to go over on the Genesee country,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he used to pull up and go over there.
They get bigger run over there.
He thrashed a time or two for Dad.
Yeah.
But George Clem thrashed for us several years. And then way back along, as Indian says, a long time ago, Martin Thomas run a machine.
Yeah, Martin used to thrash the lower end of the ridge.
Yeah, he used to thrash for us. I remember more than once.
Yeah.
He was thrashing for us up there, and by God, he never whistled.
Yeah.
He always said that he had a thrash machine, not a whistling machine.
The whistle was to stop work?
Well, any kind of signal or anything, he'd always whistle. He'd stop, blow the whistle for noon, and they'd toot it a little bit when they started,
yeah,
you know. And Martin, some guys, you know, move along the road, see somebody, pull the whistle, do that, you know. Martin said he had a thrashing machine. Now they were sitting there, thrashing there at home, and the engine was sitting just about where Bob's corral is. Separating, blowing that straw out on that stack bottom there. And Dad was doing the milking. Him and I just were a little shaver, I think I milked about one cow or two. And we were doing the milking. And the guys went to the house to eat breakfast. And we got through milking. Dad said, "We're going to hear that whistle." And Dad got up and pulled the whistle back and tied it.
No!
Tied it down. Hey, golly, Martin. Mother said, Martin, you see, was Mother's brother.
Yeah, I know he was.
And if it had been anybody but Dad, he'd kill him. He couldn't hardly clean up on his brother-in-law. And Mother said, Martin sat there, that big old mustache is, you know, and pulled his foot in and said, he just sneezed and snored, but he never got up to his breakfast. But she said, the minute he got through, God help it, he went out and unwired that whistle.
He lowered the steam, didn't he?
Yeah, he just tied it out. Pulled her back and wrapped the wire around the hammer. There it goes. Yeah, he'd have killed him if it had been anybody but his brother-in-law. Yeah, there was, most of the time there was two machines on the rig.
Yeah, I don't know, remember there was only one year.
One time there were three. There was Chris Meyer and the company machine, and then that little company rig that Perry and...
I remember that.
And Harold and them were in the one time, no free thrashing.
That was right at the end of thrashing.
That's right.
The next thing was cowboy.
Yeah, that was... That was just before the combine come in.
Yeah.
Would it work that somebody would just go out and buy a thrashing machine and then rent it out to help pay it off, or what?
Well, they just bought it, and then they went out and cut what they made of
it. I don't think anybody ever went bust here with a thrashing machine.
No, people.
That's what you mean.
The people here was good about paying the thrash bill.
Yeah.
Some thrashermen would go broke if they didn't pay their bills.
Well,
people here
would go broke in a hurry if they couldn't collect
the... People here, you know, paid the thrash bills. But right before the combine, there were three thrash machines.
Yeah.
With two company rigs.
Mm-hmm. Was company rigs worth it? You bought in shares on the machine?
There were six of them in our rig.
Yeah.
It started out, there was Byron Davison and Wade Keating, and Walt Bigham, and George and Frank Roberts and Dad. And when Wade quit, he sold Ira.
Sold to Ira. To
Ira Haven.
Yeah.
And Byard. Bigham sold to Emil Olson. Remember when Bigham had to go to the Army?
Yeah.
He sold to Emil. And Byard, I don't know whether he sold or whether what the rig was, but anyway, Cliff come up.
Yeah.
He wound up in the rig.
Yeah.
But that was the original six.
Yeah.
Was the ones I named first. And Dad and Frank and George, they were in it all the time from the start to the finish. I bought that old machine the fall of 16.
I'll
never forget that. Granddad and I went to Elk River fishing with the old Maxwell. And it was an old Altman Taylor thrasher, a 27-inch Altman Taylor. Pretty good old machine that was. And that old International tractor that burnt distillate, you remember?
Yeah.
And the pistons were down this way.
Yeah.
George run the separator and Lashley run the engine. And they got that machine, and while we was at Elk River fishing, or the old Max waited on for a couple of days. When we come home, why, the old man guy, you remember, had that place down there where, on the grade?
Yeah.
And he had wheat, a good piece of wheat, about 50 years ago. And he prevailed on the boys to thrash his wheat while it's coming up the grade, bring it home. And they pulled in there and thrashed that. The first thrashing they done was that piece on the old guy place. And they come on up on here on the
That was the first bulking too that was
That's
ever.
Right. That's right. That's what introduced buckwheat to this country. Yeah, they all each company man furnished a bundle wagon and a tank to haul the wheat.
That was a big saving.
Yeah. Each company owner had a bundle wagon and hauled the wheat, and they traded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Each man, there were six of them, and each they had a tank and four, and some of them used five horses on a wagon, and they just run on the spout and hauled it bulk, you know. And at the end of the year, they got the weights, sat down and had a grand and glory settling up some night. You know, they got George Davison, and they figured out what their expenses was and how much it was going to cost, and then each man was assessed that much according to the amount of wheat he had.
Yeah.
The amount of wheat he had, a man that had 2,000 bushels of wheat would pay more than a man that had 1,200 bushels.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured out on that basis that it was just as fair as could be.
Why, sure it was.
What their expenses was, again, what the amount that he had thrashed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the difference in the bundle wagon, why, that was just trade work back and forth.
Well, a fellow
who had a small crop would come out long on the hauling.
That's right.
He'd get paid for hauling.
He hauled more for the other guy than they hauled for him, see?
Mm-hmm.
Say one guy had 1,500 bushels of wheat and his neighbor over here had 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they traded, he'd get a little back.
Yeah.
And on the bundle wagon hauling, they paid so much for a wagon and team to haul bundles. Well, we'll say that it was, $4 or $5 a day. I remember when we got $5, that was an awful price.
Yeah. $4.
Well, I worked for Walt a 3-day haul bundle for him 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he hauled for me 2.5 days. I owe him a half a day, see?
Yeah.
That's the way I figured out. It wasn't hard to figure out.
I think $4 was the going wages for a man, a team, and a bundle wagon.
I remember when we got up to Fine All, Lester Crocker was pitching that year. And we thought that was awful. Fine All for a pitcher.
Yeah.
He pitched well one year, Fine All. Okay.
That was after things started to pick up.
That's right.
That was war days.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, in the days before this company machine came in, and people traded work around thrashing time, did people ever take advantage of that, or was everybody pretty straight with their neighbors and how they did it, or would there be some people you'd be difficult to settle up with and stuff?
I don't ever remember having trouble with anybody.
These people here were all honest.
Mm-hmm. You know something?
We didn't have any.
Up until the time that old Perry Huddleston moved over here out the corner. Nobody ever locked anything. There was nothing. They were locked up.
You didn't have to worry about anybody.
And you didn't worry because nobody took anything. But then it started. They started coming in and stealing started to take place. Nowadays it ain't so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about that time, you know, every once in a while you'd lose a ham or a side or two of bacon, you know. Things started moving around.
Yeah.
But the people lived here, the old original settlers, you didn't have to worry a thing about. They're just as honest as they could be. You didn't have to worry about a thing.
I've heard stories about how like up in the Princeton country when if something like say a ham would disappear or something, and the people would know who it was, they'd go and take care of themselves. How did it work around here?
We never did take care of old Perry, but he should have been dead and terrible.
We knew where it was going. You remember they found them hams over there, piling that wood pile on the over there on the Jennings place?
No, I don't.
Did you hear about that?
No.
I suppose you knew about it. Yeah, it was about the time that they were losing meat, and I forget who it was went over there to cutting wood, and they found a ham or two cached away in a pile where they'd pile limb wood up where they'd been making wood, you know.
Yeah.
Found it next spring. It was rotten.
Hmm.
A pretty good idea where. Who put it there?
Yeah.
He got pretty tight, you see, pretty hot.
Yeah.
He just left it.
Well, how did people try to enforce the law? Or to enforce, you know, the...
Oh, hell, I don't remember a time we didn't have a sheriff.
Mm-hmm. What would people do then, in case something went wrong? You know,
I don't know.
In case there was some sort of fight or, you know...
We never had any trouble.
Oh, we never had any trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember the time old Perry got into Wade Keene's cellar under the house where George lived.
Yeah, but, you know, he had this trap set for him.
Yeah, by golly, you know. Wade never was going to Moscow.
Decoration Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Decoration Day, and he rigged up a shotgun in there, and by golly. Who was it was plowing out there with a walking plow on that face there that Dick wanted?
No. I don't think there's anybody. I was planting beans.
Well, somebody, maybe it was you, and they heard the gun go off.
I heard the gun go off, but I thought the wind was blowing like the devil, and I thought a board had blew off.
And slapped.
You know, and come down flat.
Yeah, well.
And I never even looked. I just kept on planting beans.
Anyway, when Wade never come home that afternoon, or when they come home, the first thing, by God, Wade, he thought of was to go down and see how he's trying. Trap had worked. He opened the door and there stood Perry. He had him right there. He couldn't get out, see.
Oh, well, if the gun had already gone off, why couldn't he get out?
Yeah, he had set with a trap.
Uh-huh.
And the gun went off, by God, and it closed the door and he couldn't get it open.
Huh, without setting the gun off again?
Well, unless you open it from the outside. Well, Wade said, I opened the door and there's that. The guy blinking his eyes in the dark, bringing his eyes looking at me.
Uh-huh.
What are you doing here? In my cellar.
What did he say?
I don't know. I imagine he said quite a bit.
No, Wade came down and asked me if I heard that gun go off, and I scratched my head a while, and I told him no. I said, I thought I heard a board blow off or something.
You heard something slap or something?
Yeah, I heard something, but you know, I knew they were gone.
Yeah.
And if Wade came and told me, mm-hmm. I'd have been looking for him. I'd have been looking.
Well, how did Perry get up there? Did he wait and you got on the other side of the field?
He must have waited and I got over the hill and...
You was on the roadside
Well,
I'm on the other
side. I was going back and forth like this.
And he had you on the other side of the field where you couldn't see you.
Yeah. And
he sneaked up there.
He'd just slip along the road there, and he knew old Wade was gone.
Why, sure. He had to go by his place, you see,
mm-hmm.
to go to Moscow.
Well, how would people handle something like that? I mean, would he just let him go, or he turn him over to the sheriff in town?
No,
I think Wade just kicked his ass.
I think he just opened up a boot shop and let it go with that. No, he didn't. They never got anything.
They didn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
poor as Job's turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of kids.
Yeah. No.
But at least he let old Barry know that.
We never had troubles sick. Like that.
Oh, sugar, you shouldn't be eating stuff like that. I know.
It'll make you sick.
I know you're hungry.
People never had troubles like that. Anything like that very much.
We've been starving her.
You have.
She got a bad heart. She's a lot better. But she's a lot thinner too.
Yeah, I can tell she's thin.
Yeah. I'll give you a good supper tonight, I promise you. All you need.
And go to bed or go to sleep happy.
Was there ever any problem with here or down? I heard it one time down the valley there, there's sort of a cattle rustling outfit going on. Was there ever anything like that you heard about?
I never heard about
that.
Cattle rustling.
Cattle. I don't ever remember any.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, was it pretty a pretty religious community up here, do you think, in those times?
Oh, about 50-50.
Yeah, it was about, there used to be two churches here.
Yeah.
The chapel and the one on the hill.
There were two churches here at one time.
Is that the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church?
No, it was the Nazarenes and the Methodists.
The church was built for community church, but the Methodists took over and they saw that they wouldn't let the other people use their church, so they fixed up an old packing house and used to stand over here.
You know that was pretty small at that.
Oh, small, gnarly, that was terrible. You know,
they
should have been over backwards and they didn't do it.
It wasn't the people built it for a community church.
It was absolutely built for a community church.
Yeah.